Hello, and welcome to the Personal Wealth Coach. Today, we're going to be talking to you about the market and what happened in the market in the week ending April 12th of 2024. We're also going to talk to you about gold in China and gold hitting a record and China hitting a record as well. So if that's...
Yes, but are you going to talk about euthanasia?
I don't believe in euthanasia.
Okay.
Even though I've been there, you know. So that we're going to give the disclosure about bad puns later, but you probably figured it out at this point. Okay. So we'll be back on the other side of the bumper music with the Personal Wealth Coach. Welcome back to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jake and...
Jeff
McClure. Together we are bald, bearded, pun-loving, bad puns preferably, economists that are trying to talk to the world about what the economy is made of and how it works and all that good stuff. We're very trying, according to most people that know us. Very, very trying. So before we get started, we have to give you some more disclosures besides the pun-loving, bald, bearded folks that we are. Jeff and Jake McClure are principals at the Personal Wealth Coach. That's also the name of this podcast. Amazing. The coincidences abound everywhere. The Personal Wealth Coach is a firm that is registered with the SEC to give investment advice. That doesn't mean that the SEC particularly likes us or cares what color our hair is, or wait, we don't have hair, so they don't care that it's clear. Our clear hair is irrelevant to them. We are required to tell the world when we speak in public that our firm is registered with the SEC because we have volunteered to relinquish some of our freedom of speech. We didn't have to register with them, and the part of the freedom of speech that we have relinquished, and you find us unrelinquishing it, you should be complaining to the SEC, is our ability to lie about finance. To tell you things that we don't believe to be true will get us in a lot of trouble. The same thing, by the way, is true of Elon Musk and now Donald Trump when it comes to their roles in ownership in publicly traded companies. So we have volunteered for that, as did Elon Musk when he bought Twitter. It bought more than 10% of Twitter, and he suddenly had to control his mouth. He's said some things that have caused the SEC to be upset, but that was a really long disclosure about we volunteered, that's why we're telling you, because if we are damaging the public, you should tell them about it. We also aren't going to be giving you investment advice on this program, even though that's what we're registered to do. We're not going to do it because there's lots of people listening that aren't you, and we don't know them all. We may not even know you. So what we're going to do instead is give education, hopefully. And if you need it again, we'll do re-education, and we'll hold summer camps for that purpose in very cold wastelands so that everybody can remember the correct approach to education. No, that was facetious. And you have a disclosure that you like to give.
I don't know if I like to give it, but I think it's important. The information that we present on this educational podcast has been obtained from sources we deem to be reliable, but we make no warranty or guarantee as to the accuracy or completeness of that information.
Very nice. Now, what happened this week in the market?
Well, the S&P 500 stock index, and it's important to remember something about the S&P 500 stock index. It is 101 years old. And sometimes acts like it's 101 years old.
Just wanders all over, can't figure out where it's going, gets lost sometimes. Yep.
And it spooks easily. So it got spooked by the bureaucrats at the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Now, if someone's going to get spooked, you think bureaucrats sitting around with green eye shades at the Bureau of Labor Statistics would be the least scary people out there. But that's not so.
We're not sure they really have green eye shades, but we like to imagine it so.
Oh, yes. Its minions, stock traders, bolted for the proverbial door, taking the index level down to 5,123.41, which is down 1.55% for the week, although it's still a really high number. It finished the week 7.41% ahead this year, 24% up from this time last year. The ZRSP U.S. Mid-Cap Value Index, which is our other stock market indicator that we follow, didn't want to be outdone by its older, larger brother. It fell 2.86% to 2575.07, but it managed to hang on to a 2.4% gain this year and a very respectable 10.75% rise from this time last year. The inflation fear that had the S&P 500 and other market indices down a little bit this today was suddenly added to rather dramatically when the United States Department of Defense announced that we are sending warships to the coast off of Israel because we think there's going to be shooting going on from Iran. And for some reason or other, that made people a little nervous in the stock market, which was weird. And the reason I say it's weird is if you think you're going to get a war in what we used to call the Middle East, but is now properly called Southwest Asia or the Levant, the price of oil normally goes up, but it didn't. It just ended the week. Actually, it spiked three times during the week and promptly went back down again, which was on a scale of 1 to 10 weird. U.S. Treasury note also missed the message that war was at hand, because if war is at hand, normally interest rates jump upward. But they just crept up a little bit from last to 4.5% from last week's 4.39. And this is consistent with a very long-term, non-event-driven increase in longer-term interest rates that we have been seeing moving forward. And probably, at least in my opinion, will continue forward. I would not be at all surprised to see, by the way, recently, 4% was considered to be shockingly high for the 10-year treasury, and I would not be surprised to see 5% in the not too far distant future. So we'll see how that works out. West Texas Intermediate crude, as I said, ended the week at 85.51, about where it was last week, and that's it. Oh, I guess gold is in the market, is part of the market thing, right, too, isn't it?
Sure. Yeah, we can make it that.
Well, gold hit a record, 2,400 something. I don't have the number right here in front of me. And it may be wrong with it, 24. But the weirdness is, we are seeing in the United States net sales of gold ETFs and gold coins. We're not seeing net buys. Now, when that normally happens, it indicates that the price of gold will fall, but instead it's been going up. And so a lot of people have been wondering who's buying gold, because the central banks around the world that announce their gold buys aren't doing any unusual gold buying.
Well, there's one. One that's doing a lot of unusual gold buying.
But it's not doing enough to run the price up the way it is. Basically, people in the United States are selling gold to the People's Bank of China.
Well, they just bought 72 tons of gold. The People's Bank of China bought 72 tons of gold from Switzerland, the Bank of Switzerland, just this month.
March. That also means the Bank of Switzerland is selling while the Bank of China is buying, which nets to zero.
Right. Well, the Bank of Switzerland is really good at making profits on gold. They tend to sell it when the price is high and continue to make it and hold on to it until the prices go up again.
The issue is there's a lot of other gold buying going on that's not disclosed. And the suspicion among people who do this is that it is individuals in China and companies in China. Now that's, and they're kind of thinking, well, maybe it's the real estate collapse. But this is the point. We've had real estate collapses before in China, and the price of gold did not go up. Frankly, it worries me a little bit. If being my old intelligence analyst that I once was, if I were an intelligence analyst still, and I had access to more stuff than I have access to now, I would know more about this. But my guess would be, and I'd go looking for information, that if China is preparing to go to war, and if China goes to war, the dollars and the money they have in China suddenly will get cut off, I might have a tendency to go buy some gold if I were in China too.
So you've got your thumb right on it, or the hammer on the nail. In a speech Janet Yellen gave in China last week, she was talking about not supporting Russia and the war in Ukraine and not to do the sanctions sort of thing. And one of the diplomats from China got up and gave a short speech afterwards, talking about how they would prefer if the United States was a more trustworthy banking partner. And that was a direct reference to when Russia invaded Ukraine, the United States seized their dollar reserves held in the United States. And they had a lot of them. They had quite a large amount. Several hundred billion dollars was just frozen. Now, we didn't take it and spend it. It's still sitting there, and there are movements in Congress to say, hey, why don't we use the money in the bank that we froze from Russia to go and buy stuff for Ukraine, or pay us back for the stuff that we're already lending to Ukraine in the lend-lease thing. So China's looking at that, and as we said in our last podcast, they're cranking out ships, and the majority of the ships that they're cranking out are warships, but very specific types, landing vessels. This is not for fleet warfare. This is for getting across a relatively short bit of water to put troops on the ground somewhere. And they're spending a lot of money on that. And as we said in the newsletter back in 2015 and 2014, Russia's spending a lot of money on defense, and their economy's not doing spectacularly well. When a country's economy's not doing well, and they're spending a larger and larger percentage of their GDP on, quote, air quotes around this, defense, it generally historically has an outcome that we don't like. And China's doing it now. Russia did it before. The price of gold is going way up. So there's some other stuff too. The whispers of war between Iran and Israel is causing a lot of people in Southwest Asia to buy gold because they're not sure which government's going to be around afterward. And if you're not sure which government's going to be around afterwards, you probably don't want to have the currency of a government you're not sure is going to exist. So when you add all that up, India is also buying a lot of gold. And the amount of gold being purchased by China dwarfs the amount of gold being purchased by all U.S. citizens by a factor of about 15 to 1. And that shouldn't be surprising. You know, that we've got news that are reported by Bloomberg and by ABC about, you know, Costco is selling like $100 million worth of gold every month. And that sounds like a tremendous amount. That's such a tiny blip. It's a little drop, not in a bucket, but in a swimming pool. It's not necessarily an ocean, but it's a tiny amount. And so the price of gold is not being driven by the United States at this point.
It's important to recognize that the movement in the price of gold has, in the last few decades, changed dramatically. There was a time when people in the United States buying gold would run the price of gold up. In other words, let's say we got inflation or we got a recession or something and people were concerned about the security of their investments or their dollars or whatever. The price of gold used to go up. So it used to run opposite to the dollar. What's happened in the last 10 years is reflected by the fact that it is China and India that are the primary gold buyers and sellers.
Right.
And so, for example,
the statistic on India, by the way, is 8 to 1 rather than the 12 to 1 from China. So between them, they're 20 to 1 to us.
What that means is, and we actually saw this happen in 2020, the cratering of the global economy that looked like it was coming did not cause the price of gold to rise. It caused it to fall precipitously because the Indians were selling gold. They needed cash. The next big crisis might well be between us and China. And in that crisis, traditionally, gold bugs would think the price of gold would go up. Well, if China is then suddenly dependent upon gold to buy everything, they're going to be selling gold like mad to buy things, which means the price of gold will probably crater in a crisis.
I mean, this is a subject that I studied in school ad nauseum. At the event of the catastrophe, gold prices almost always fall. Why? Well, because if there's a catastrophe going on and you don't want to use other money, you want to use the gold, well, then you're trying to put it out on the market. You've got to sell it to use it. It's really hard to buy groceries with a bar of gold. They generally won't trade it for eggs. So you've got to convert it into whatever currency you're going to use. And that means that you're selling it into the market. And if you and other people are doing the same thing at the same time, this is where the demand for gold falls right at the point when you bought the gold for just in case. There are things to do in the event of total society collapse, and it isn't gold purchase, by the way. I mean, go through papers that I've written on the subject. I can show you great historical tomes on the subject. I'm not saying that gold is a bad thing to own. I'm not. You can do a lot of things with gold. But in times of societal collapse, it's one of the worst things to own. It makes you a target, and it's basically worthless. You can't use it for anything. And if you show that you have gold in a societal collapse, they don't like it. So this is an off chance, but societal collapses have happened a lot of times in history. And the thing that holds up best as a form of currency is hard alcohol. Something that you can drink and use as medicine becomes a currency much faster than rare metals, because you can't eat rare metals. You can't use it for anything except for looking at it or becoming a target of other people that think maybe it'll be worth something if I have it. So having said all of that, gold has a value of its own that's not based on the speculative value. And that is what it's used for in its utility. You can use it to create things of beauty, jewelry, and in some cases, toilets and guns. That's a little odd, but some people want to use it for that. They consider that a thing of beauty. Other people use it for electronics. Jewelers can take gold at whatever price they buy it for. And if they're decent at their job, they create something of greater value than the metal. And therefore, they can create a profit by adding their work to it. There's an underlying rule that we like to refer back to regularly. You should never expect to make a profit on something that you didn't add value to. You can make a profit, but you shouldn't put your expectations there. You can make a profit by buying gold and then waiting for somebody else, the price to go up, and selling it. And if you make a market in gold, there are a lot of the people that make money, the most money in gold, huge amounts of money in gold, are the people that have the stores with the guys out on the street with the signs that they're spinning around that say, we buy gold. Because they're buying it from you at 10% of the spot value. And they're selling it at 10% above the spot value. So it's like a 90% profit margin. And all they're doing is heating it up and melting it down into different increments.
I tend to think that may be outdated. I think they buy a little below spot value and sell.
They buy it
to the public at spot value.
10% of spot value, and they don't sell to the public. They melt it down and they go and they sell it at wholesale. And sometimes if they do sell to the public, it'll be in bar form at above the spot value. Costco's selling it somewhere between 5 and 10% above the market spot value.
So it's mostly stolen stuff, and that's why, or something, because nobody in their right mind would pay 10% of the spot value for gold. Would sell it for 10%.
Sure, a lot of people do. They say, hey, I have grandma's old jewelry, and I haven't used it. I don't know what to do with it. It's gaudy for me. And they try to find some place to sell it. So they go to a jewelry store, and the jewelry store says, this is outdated. I can put it on consignment, but I don't think it's going to sell at the same price as these in-demand, not outdated models. So they wind up going to these sharks, basically, going in the door and saying, here, weigh this. They weigh it and they give a number that's preposterously low to anybody that knows the price of gold. The problem is they didn't buy the jewelry usually. The people that are selling are not the ones that bought it. And most of that gold then immediately gets melted down and refined, because the gold that's being sold is 12 carat or 2 carat in some cases, and they have to get all the copper and all the rest of it out of it. There's a whole process here, and people, you said stolen. It's quite often the same forges that are used to melt down catalytic converters for their platinum. So right. There is a tie there to organized crime, but it's legal to buy gold at really stupidly low prices and then melt it down and sell it. It's not illegal to buy gold. So that's what most of the gold market in the amateur area is. Even if you go to a shop, there used to be shops and malls and things, and they sold coins and whatever, and they would buy gold. Even those folks had to buy significantly below what they would sell it at retail. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to afford the rent of being in a place where people are walking around. So there's a cost to owning gold that isn't wrapped up in the gold itself. It's how do you get rid of it at the time that you need money instead of gold? How do you convert it to food or to clothing or to firearms or whatever else people dream that gold will buy for them? And if everybody's doing it at the same time, there's just not a market for it. I wrote a paper on Pompeii, Herculaneum, and the downfall there of the economy of Rome. Because Pompeii was, you know, there was just a thing that popped up on my feed, the archaeological discovery of a new mural in Pompeii, and it's just absolutely gorgeous. It was covered in ash, and now they're pulling it away, and it's these people, and the artwork on it is stunning. These weren't poor people. Pompeii was the Beverly Hills of Rome. It was where the rich people needed to go. If you were rich and you wanted to display that you were rich, you went and lived in Pompeii, or at least got a house there. And the rich people are the ones that left in the first fleet that actually made it out. And they left with every bit of portable wealth that they could. It was the second fleet, mostly of slaves, that and that was Pliny the Elder, that was the admiral of that fleet, that went down in the explosion of the volcano. It was mostly slaves. So the first fleet left, and it was loaded with gold. And that gold hit the market, and the price of gold in the Roman Empire didn't recover for 400 years. Because what did they do with the gold when they needed a new place to live? They needed to find a new place. They all wanted to build houses and get more murals and go back to the kind of luxury that they had. And so they started spending the gold instead of gathering the gold. And when it started hitting the market, this is part of the reason why a fiat currency was born in Rome. Before, it had been weight of metal, but the weight of metal became valueless to a great deal of the empire. So they had to stamp it and say, this is the seal of the emperor, and so therefore it is worth this much. And that was the first true fiat currency that was not based in the value of the metal that was making the currency. And all of that was not because of a lead up to a catastrophe, and so people were smart to own gold for the catastrophe. It was the other way around. And you can look at history. The price of gold in Germany right after World War II was very low. It was dirt cheap because you can't eat it. Right after World War I, right after World War II, if you're in a failed nation, gold becomes nearly valueless. And I know I'm offending people that are gold bugs. There was a time when gold prices were fixed, where it made a fantastic hedge against inflation because it was fixed, but it's not fixed anymore.
There was a time, and a lot of our mythology about investing and gold thing and balance of trade and things of that nature hark back to a time when the United States was a closed economy. And oddly enough, the United States was a semi-closed economy into the 20th century. But then the economy opened up some, and we had a semi-open economy that included Western Europe and, to a very limited extent, in Japan and the United States. Well, that was a semi-closed economy. By the Bretton Woods Agreement, where we agreed that gold was going to be a certain price, if you look at the signatories of the Bretton Woods Agreement, they were able to hold gold to $35 an ounce after World War II for an extended period of time because they were the dominant powers in the world economically, absolutely dominant. The British at that point had an empire that stretched around the world. The French had a huge empire.
I think you mean World War One. Yeah.
Actually, it was after World War II that it fell apart. The Bretton Woods Agreement continued after World War II.
And you said it held the value. That's what I mean. It was right after World War One that it held the value so well.
The Bretton Woods Agreement at $35 an ounce was after World War II. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
So then we went to, right now, a global economy where anybody and everybody can do almost anything. And the Western powers in the United States together still have a majority, but that's all we have. And a bare majority, I might add. Europe and the United States barely tip the scales into a majority right now. And with the rising economic power of what we used to call the third world countries, including China, we probably won't have that very long. So it's kind of a free-for-all out there. And the price of gold is no longer dominated by the United States and Europe. It's dominated by China. It's dominated by developing countries where they don't trust their currency.
Right. So we didn't trust our currency during that time period, which is why the Rockefellers were part of the Bretton Woods Agreement. It was a bunch of international wealthy people, as well as the countries that housed them, that said, let's fix the price of gold. We're not in that position anymore, and we don't want to be. The dollar has a, if you compare the volatility of the dollar versus the volatility of gold, there's no comparison. The dollar's been much, much more gentle. And this is the final nail. If you look at inflation and you look at the peak of the market in 1982 for gold and you apply inflation to it, it's the same price today. So it's taken 42 years to get back to the same price. Why? Well, because we found a lot better ways of finding gold. It's not as finite a thing as people thought it was. I said it was the final nail, but I'm going to put another one in there. In 2017, an asteroid passed within the orbit of the moon to Earth, that close. People didn't think it was going to hit the Earth because all the math was done, but that asteroid contained more platinum and more gold than has been combined, found on our planet since the beginning of history. And at some point, we're going to have companies that can shoot rockets into space. Wait, we do have rockets in space. At some point, we're going to have rockets that can go to other planets. Whoa, we're getting really close to that, aren't we? There's a potential here to go out and find those asteroids, and there's lots of companies that are putting money toward that as their only objective in getting into space, to get up and put rocket motors on some asteroids to change their orbits so that they gently come into orbit of some body that they can harvest the gold from, the body being a planetary or moon body, that they can go up and safely harvest that stuff and bring it back home. And I have said this to people, and I often get the response, so that's months-long journey in the most dangerous environment you can imagine. Most people won't come back from that. And my answer to that is it happened before. And people go, what? People sent rockets into space to go get asteroids? No, they sent ships into the ocean for months at a time to go to a place they called the New World so that they could collect.
Sometimes for years at a time, and they didn't come back.
Right.
One of the first colonies started in the United States by the British. Everybody dies, and it's been a mystery ever since because nobody survived to tell what I'm doing.
Right. And people say, well, it's not as dangerous as space. Well, I have to break this to you. The vast majority of sailors during that time period didn't know how to swim. Let that sink in for a second. It's not a good idea to be a sailor if you don't know how to swim, but it was a part of a superstition that lasted a very long time in Europe. A lot of the Portuguese navigators, the best on the planet at the time, couldn't swim. The Spaniards couldn't swim. A lot of the English could. The English sailors were fairly decent at swimming, but a lot of the Spanish, a lot of the Portuguese, the Italians, the ones that were doing most of the exploring and most of the conquest of gold didn't know how to swim. So we've done it before. When there's a profit motive that's large enough, it works. And the price of gold hasn't recovered since the 1600s. And we know that because we can measure in skills. If somebody made a beautiful suit that someone would wear to the court of a king, like Louis XVI, you can look at the amount of gold that would be used to buy that suit. And then if you come forward to today and you say, how much gold would it take to buy one of the designer label suits that somebody might wear to the Oscars? The absolute best clothing available, how much gold would it take? And it's about one-tenth the amount of gold today as it was then. Because back then, gold in very small amounts was huge amounts. And I said this earlier today at the office, that one of the most expensive metals on the planet, the most expensive metal that was obtainable on the planet all the way up to 1908, was aluminum. The king of the Philippines had a party, and he presented his guest with a whole plate. Solid plate, cup, the entire utensilware was all aluminum as a statement of his grand wealth. Because the only way you could get aluminum back then was when lightning struck boron. Well, it wasn't long after that when we discovered that we could make lightning in an electric plant and just blast the boron until we had really cheap aluminum. It went from the most expensive metal on the planet to the least expensive because we found a new way to get to it. And if we have a new way to get to gold in space, or anywhere else for that matter, we're going to do it because people like to make a profit. So having said all of that, if you've made money in gold, congratulations. We're not saying that was a bad thing. You did great. You shouldn't expect to make money in anything that you don't add value to. Because if you add value to the things that people are willing to pay for, you should have a pretty good expectation of continuing a profitable career. If you show up to work and don't add value, you're probably not going to stay there very long. If you buy something and just say, I'm not going to do anything to it, I'm going to sell it later, hopefully you understand the market. Hopefully you understand when to sell it. A lot of people that buy gold actually never intend to sell it. They would sell it in the event of some grand catastrophe. But the stories that I've heard, the number of times I've heard the stories of people that buy a house, they're cleaning up the basement, and they find a patch of dirt in the concrete, and they dig it up, and there's some gold bars in there. Somebody didn't sell that. Nobody made a profit on that except for the person that found it. And it wouldn't surprise me a bit if those people then went and sold it to the people that said, we buy gold. And that's the end of my soapbox. Do you have anything to wrap up this week's episode?
Well, gold, a little thing about gold. The discovery by the Spanish that their new colonies in Central America were literally awash in gold that the Incas and Mayans had accumulated, and they started bringing it into Spain, caused a 50% drop. 50, depending on which numbers you look at, the actual numbers say that inflation in Spain in a very few years was between 200 and 300%. Mm-hmm. Now, when they measured inflation, it was against an ounce of gold or a real, which means the price of gold dropped between 50 and 67% in a very short period of time and didn't recover for literally hundreds of years.
It really hasn't recovered since then.
It really hasn't recovered.
Right, so,
and it's just one of those interesting points. And if Elon Musk manages to snag that asteroid the next time through, which I wouldn't be the least surprised to find out that he has plans to snag that gold asteroid next time it passes by. And I don't know when it's going to pass by. I think they said something like 22 years or something.
But if you go out and snag it before it comes back, I mean, if you speed it up, slow it down, change its trajectory, this is all stuff that we can do these days.
Well, we can't quite get to it yet with anything big enough to do anything to it. But that's one of the reasons I read on several occasions, and actually heard a guy who did not want his name associated with it, who works for Musk, who said that was one of his primary motivations. Is there literally, platinum is actually worth more than gold.
Oh, yeah.
And we need platinum industrially. And there are asteroids that are pure platinum. How do we know, by the way, they're pure platinum? Because we can tell by their movement how much they weigh, what their mass is. And we can say, that has got to be gold, or that has got to be platinum because of the weight. And it's perfectly reasonable to assume that there's some asteroids out there that are made of that.
Yeah, and there's been some probes that went up and did some laser spectrometry on them to get a look at what they're made out of. And there's a lot of gold up there. Why? Well, because gold is a heavy metal and tends to be at the core of a planet. And if a planet blows up, all that core gets thrown out. Anyway, what do you want to say to wrap this up?
I want to say that the economy is doing well, and the burst of inflation we've had early this year is probably temporary. However, I strongly suspect we may not get a short-term interest rate cut this year. If we do, it'll be very late in the year because... Yeah,
I agree with that.
We got to wait on the the PCE to come out.
Right. There's a possibility that we get a hike. Like a raise of interest rates. It's not a high possibility because that would have to be treated with kid gloves by the Fed so it didn't cause some kind of a panic of, oh no, you're going to raise it even more, but it's a possibility. And if you would like to talk to us off the air, if you would like to talk to us in person even, we give investment advice and portfolio management for those that we advise. You can call us locally, get voicemail during the weekend, real live people during the week at
254-947-1111.
Or you can reach us toll free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. There's a contact form there. You can read our newsletter, sign up for it anyway. And anything you want to do on there. There's also a veritable morgue of old radio program recordings and podcasts. Go back and see what we had to say about stuff. Or don't. You don't have to as well. Until next time, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.